everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Backlog Battle Podcast. This is Alex.
And this is Daniel. So, Alex, you released a video recently, didn't you?
Yeah, so I finally have my review of Octopath Traveler out. Now, it's
nice.
It's kind of funny because I was not sure if I should make this video because, I mean, who else out there has not bought the game yet? You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. So why would you need a review, like, about, what is it now? Like, is it 2, 3, 4 weeks after? No, I would say, like, probably 3 weeks after the release. And then, you know what I did?
I mean, people still like to hear other people talk about things, you know? Like,
yeah, okay.
I mean, why do football fans love to hear like radio shows about people talking about the game that they just watched? Because it's just a thing people like.
Okay, good point. That makes me feel good about the video then, because I really poured my heart and soul into this and stuff. And I don't know, like, I felt really kind of invigorated by it, like, and it's funny because, like, when this game was announced and it came out and stuff, like, a lot of people were poo-pooing the story, that, you know, like, not just reviewers, right, but also fans, like, you know, and gamers and stuff, like, who played the game. And I'm like, wait a second, this is a really, really weird reaction to this game. Like,
see, I think the problem that I've encountered is that the majority of the people who said that only played, like, the first chapter of each character, and then just assumed that, oh, these stories are all going to be as boring as how they start.
Yeah.
Which I think is just incredibly, like, short-sighted.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like reading the first chapter of a book and then just going, like, oh, well, the rest of this first chapter is all set up. I bet the rest of the book is all set up. But the reason I think people are doing that with Octopath is because, like, it's 8 different stories. And so it's like 8 different setups for different stories. So yeah. I think that's what it is, right? Because most of the people that have actually played the game at length have come back and be like, no, the stories all get better as they go along.
I agree, obviously,
right? Yeah. Like,
yeah,
because that's how stories work. You do the setup first, you know, and then you get to the good stuff, right?
Exactly. And that's kind of like where I was coming from with that. And I couldn't find anything, you know, really big and nagging for me as far as, like, the game goes. You know, like, to me, like, I just kind of played it the way that I usually play things, which is, you know, I don't look at playthroughs. I don't look at my friends on Twitch, even who are streaming it. You know, never watched any of them, right? I wanted to support them somehow, but I couldn't because they're playing Octopath. And even on YouTube, right? Like, I couldn't watch anybody playing the game because I'm like, well, I want an untainted version of my review out there. And, you know, finally, it's out. And even in the review and stuff, like, it's kind of crazy because I actually laboriously spent some time explaining how the progression system works, how the job system is different from, like, previous games. And I, you know, like, because to me, like, that's the thing that I really latched onto in this game, apart from the story and the music and, of course, the graphics, is pretty much, like, how the game played. Like, the job system, like, I'll say it now, and I've said this in the review, spoilers, I guess. Like, this is probably my favorite iteration of the job system to date.
That is quite the claim. Yeah. I mean, there have been some pretty phenomenal job systems throughout the years. And for you to say that, I mean,
yeah.
Have you really thought about that?
Yes, actually, I thought about it very, very, very much.
Fair enough.
I guess the best way to kind of just go into this is start talking about how Octopaths work, right? In case you guys, you know, want the abbreviated version of this, if you go to youtube.com/mybacklogbattle and check out my review of Octopath Traveler, which is, you know, up on that channel, like, I go through everything, like as much as I can, right? I'm not going to bore you like and spend 8 minutes or so talking about just that. But like the biggest thing for me as far as like the job system in Octopath goes is like that there is no individual levels per job. That's gone. There's just a character level.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, like to me, like I love those previous job systems, right? Because there's like leveling processes. There's like hybridization in some of them that require you to level up, excuse me, to a certain degree. But in Octopath, they completely just threw that out of the door and they said, well, you can switch jobs, you know, like outside of battle, however many times you want. And you will accumulate a kind of different currency called job points. And that is on a per character basis. And depending...
That sounds like Final Fantasy Tactics.
No, does it? I mean, kind of, right? But in Tactics, you still had individual levels. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of like where I'm getting at. Because, yeah, you still had job points. You still had that currency. But you still have to level the class. So basically, you can wind up, I don't know, being a level 40 warrior or something, but have like a level 1 white mage, which, you know, that's to me like the idea of being a level 40 badass. And then you're like, what, like possibly 50%, 60% in the game only to have your measly like white mage be at level 1. Like, that's not appealing to me. Like, I'm like, what, I'm going to have to go back to, like, the level 1 lobby areas to level up, like, reasonably? Or, you know, they get carried and stuff? Like, I mean, chances are, depending on the kind of battle system there is, the enemies might be smart enough to be like, hey, you're a level 1, I'm going to one-shot you every single time, you know what I mean? It's like, you know? Yeah,
well, I mean, that's not how it works in Final Fantasy Tactics, right? Like, mm-hmm. You still have your character's level, and then the class level doesn't really affect your stats. I think it just affects like what skills you have.
I see. But still though.
So let's say you were playing as a knight and then you decide I want to be a ninja, like you're not suddenly down to like 20 HP fighting mm-hmm. like enemies with 200 HP. It doesn't work that way.
Okay. Because like that was always my kind of thought process when I was playing these games. Like, man, you know, that still kind of sounds lame. Like, just even like that low B number, I'm like, So that's kind of the main difference with those games and Octopath, is Octopath just decided, you know what? You know, screw this. Like, you know, the whole, you know, leveling representation and stuff for each job, it doesn't really matter. Let's just, here's, you know, X number of job points. You can use it to on whatever jobs you want. And as you're unlocking the jobs, or the job abilities, excuse me, you will unlock passives. Now, here's the interesting part. So, Octopath Traveler has characters that have locked primary jobs. And what's interesting is you can assign a secondary job. And what that allows you to do is all the weapons that secondary job can use, including all their abilities and passives, you can use on your main character. So, for example, if you start with Ophelia, who is a cleric, which I started with, like, she only can use a staff, right? Like, because, you know, clerics and healers and stuff. But if her secondary job is knight, she can use a lance, she can use a sword, and all the unlocked, you know, knight jobs that the knight can use, as long as she uses job points to buy them. You with me so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the crazy thing is that regardless of whether she has knight, she has thief, or whatever as a secondary, as long as she has, like, as long as she spend job points to unlock certain skills, certain passives for that job get available to use. And so you can kind of like mix and match these different passives so that, I don't know, you have passives from thief, you know, from cleric, from merchant, and knight, like all equipped to that one character. And so that's where that's where you can kind of make up for the deficiencies of that character, you know. So it's kind of crazy. It's almost like this, I don't want to say dumbed down, like, materia system almost, but it's like, it kind of feels like it in a way.
So that kind of reminds me again of Tactics, in that with Tactics, you could learn skills, obviously, for that respective class. Like, if you level up the knight class, you know, you will learn skills respective to that class. And if you switch to a different class, you know, let's say you become a ninja mm-hmm. or a black mage or whatever, you can, if you had learned the skill to use a sword, you can be a white mage, you know, using a knight's sword.
Interesting.
But you can, right, but you have to learn that skill in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. And are there any limits, though, as to how many of those abilities you can kind of have on that character?
Yes. See, the way that it works is, like, you can only equip specific types of skills. There are different slots and different for different categories of skills. Mm-hmm. So, like, you'll have one that's, like, an active skill. You'll have one slot that is like a passive skill. Think, you know, I think there's a few more. It's been a while since I played it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you can mix and match if you want to. So like, you could be a black mage that has the thief's active skill of stealing, but then you have the passive skill of the ninja to dual wield.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
a super good system. Just really cool.
Yeah. And to me, like, that's still a really cool customizable system. And probably, like, you know, some people might say it's more highly customizable than, you know, than Octopath. But the fact that you basically can, at whim, you know, just change and just buy out the abilities, plus, you know, just change the passives and stuff, like, I think that. That's actually a really interesting shift in that sort of system. And, you know, I think what's kind of crazy in Octopath is the way that you configure your character is actually pretty damn important. Probably more important, actually, than just saying, well, I want this cool thing to happen to my character, right? I mean, granted, there are obvious strategic abilities, you know, like strategies, excuse me, to being able to dual wield things or do all sorts of stuff, like in tactics. But like, you know, in Octopath, where you have to actually like take advantage of breaking the shield of your enemies in order for them to lose turns and to deal higher damage, like, you have to think of whether or not, okay, like, the cleric, the white mage, for example, is worth equipping the sorcerer slash black mage job, because if that's the case, well, her, you know, his or her, like, staff is only going to be the only physical weapon that they have. What if the enemy that you're going to be facing required a lance? Well, you know, which character is going to have that, you know? And let's say you have like a set of four characters that you only play with, or three. How can you compensate for the lack of the lance, or maybe a lack of a spell? You get what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. These decisions are very crucial, especially when you start facing, you know, a lot of the characters in the game, because now you got to think like, okay, did I just equip the wrong job and equipment to these characters? Like, is there a way that I can compensate for the lack of this, because all three of my base characters are either using staves or daggers, you know, and I need swords here somewhere, you know? So,
okay.
Yeah.
So one thing in Final Fantasy Tactics is that, because you were talking about job points. Now, the way that job points worked in Tactics was that when you are using that class, you will accrue job points specifically for that class.
Yes.
But you know, you cannot take those job points and then spend it in a different job. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I think it mm-hmm. works, because, excuse me, it's been like 10 years since I played the game, so yeah. I'm really trying hard to remember. I believe that's the case. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. For this, it's, you know, as I've said earlier, it's per character. So literally, like, you have 15,000 job points, go ham and just buy as many skills as you can for all the jobs that you have. That's literally, okay. Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's like a universal pool for all the classes then.
Basically. So, and the way that it works is that the cost per job actually increases. So, for example, the first skill costs 50, second is 100, and I think the third is 500. I mean, I'm being hazy here, but like then 1,000, then 3,000, then 5,000. So it you know, and that's for the same job. But like, let's say you bought like the first skill for every single job, that's 50 each. So, you know, like you can literally like just easily like do that if you wanted to for some reason. But it's not, let's put it this way, it's not far-fetched to be able to learn all of the abilities for all the jobs for all the characters in the game without spending, you know, like hundreds of hours. Like probably, yeah probably less than 100, but you know.
See, going back to Final Fantasy V specifically, so in that game, the way that one works is you get ABP, which I think it's ability points for your jobs.
Yeah. So,
unlike the job system in Tactics where like you can buy different skills, that one it works specifically. You equip that class, you get those ABP points, and then... when it reaches a certain level, like when you get like 50 or 100, however you need, then the class levels up and you get a new skill.
Right.
So imagine having to max out every class for every character.
I mean, I bet you somebody's already done that though.
Well, I'm sure, but like that's a completionist nightmare. Like that is hundreds of hours of grinding just like... Unless you find an enemy or a strategy to get like tons of, you know, ability points.
I mean, is that hellacious or is it heaven? I mean, you know, I know a lot of completionists who want more out of their game. So
for me, that's awful. Like, I mean, okay. On one hand, I say awful. I don't mean it's bad game design. I mean awful in the sense that, like, I would never want to do that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's fine that it's in the game. But I do think it's interesting that Octopaths decide, no, we're not going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool that the game found its own voice.
Yeah.
And it's like yeah, we're clearly borrowing from these older titles, you know, and they did some cool stuff. But we want to do some cool stuff, too. We're going to do it our own way.
Yeah. And again, if you guys want, like, you know, the skinny on more of that info, it's all in my review on the YouTube channel. But I actually wanted to, you know, springboard this into some of the job system games that I've played. Like, you know, 11. Oh, my God. Final Fantasy 11. Holy crap. Did you know that that had a job system?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that had a job system. But it's not like cool like, you know, Final Fantasy 5 or 3 or even Tactics and stuff. Like you can't hybridize like jobs in that game. It's like, you know, you can have something called a sub job. And what that is basically like, let's say the level of your warrior is like level 30, right? If you equip a sub job, basically like you'll get all the abilities of that sub job only up until half of the level of your main job. So basically like up to level 15. So like if you were a warrior, level 30 warrior, and you know you have a white mage, that white mage's maximum level is going to be 15, which
that's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird, and to be quite honest, I'm not sure how that works now, because back in the day when people saw you with that, like with that configuration, people were like, no, I don't want to party with you. Why the hell do you have that? Because, you know, because another thing that they do, too, is that the sub job also affects your stats. So in other words, like, let's say I'm a Dark Knight, right? Like, you know, like you have the Dark Knight class in Final Fantasy XI and you're a damage dealer. If you don't have the warrior class as your sub job, because the warrior actually has like a, you know, a stat buff and stuff for strength, like people are going to be like, no, we don't need your no party. I'm like, what? it's kind of nuts, right? You know, but yeah, it's like, it's probably one of the things that I stopped playing Final Fantasy XI for, because that job system just did not really work well, you know. And I think it was like back in 2004, 2003. that I played that game. So it's really insane. And actually, like, you know, I played the very first incarnation of the job system, which is Final Fantasy I. And by job system, guys out there, we're talking about, like, the Square Enix definition of the job system, right? Where, you know, you basically can, you know, assign jobs for each character, right? And if, you know, if the game allows, you can change the jobs or even upgrade them after leveling up a specific amount. So games like Final Fantasy IX, Final Fantasy IV actually don't count in this definition. But yeah, Final Fantasy I is crazy because you start off as, like, you know, fighter, monk, thief, red mage, white mage, black mage, and then in the middle of that game, you actually have upgraded classes. Because at the time, too, they called them classes, not jobs. And you go, yeah, and you go to, like, warrior, I think, oh man, I'm trying to remember. You went from, actually, no, it was karate master first. That was, like, the lowest version of that job. And then you went warrior, karate, no, warrior, monk, ninja, red wizard, white wizard, black wizard. You remember that?
In the first Final Fantasy?
Yeah.
Because you, I think you need to get the rat's tail and give it to Bahamut, and then eventually, like, everyone can class upgrade.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's what really crazy.
What a weird thing to need a class upgrade for.
Right? Yeah, and honestly, like, it's been so long. I played the game as a kid, and I don't even know how significant the upgrades were, right? Because I'm like, man, it's got to have been one crazy thing, though, back in the day, you know, to be playing that and be like, oh, look at that. Like, you know, all my characters are buffer now. Oh, everyone's
super big now.
Yeah, they look better proportioned than before. Because, you know, before that, you're just kind of like this fat, pudgy, like, super deformed character. And now you're, like, slim and you got tight abs and stuff. Even the wizards have tight abs, which is kind of weird. So it's like, all right, cool. We can friggin' save the world now. So,
yeah, in the GBA and PSP remakes, they just, like, look nicer. they have a wardrobe change and they just look, you know, better.
Like,
basically,
they took a shower or something like that. That's basically what happened.
Kind of, yeah. Like, in their old forms, they look kind of scraggly, you know. You know, they're wearing leather, but then when they class upgrade, they're wearing nice armor, you know, nice and shiny. Like,
yeah. So basically, what you're trying to say is, like, Bahamut is really, like, you know, like a tailor or something, right? Like, freaking
exactly. Yeah. He's basically the queer eye.
Do you watch that show? What the hell?
The old one or the new one?
I don't know either. Like, I watched the old one.
I never watched the old one, but I did watch some of the new one.
Okay. All right. That's, yeah. It's just crazy. But, you know, my aversion towards the job system has always been that grind. Like, I would love to love the grind. I'll be honest. I would love to.
Well, the thing is, though, for, like, most of the games, like, unless we're talking about Tales of the World Radiant Mythology, which you shouldn't because that game sucks, that's a game that had what you were fearing before, where you had to start back at level one, and it affects your stats, and that game.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like I was saying before, Final Fantasy Tactics, that's not the case. It's not the case in Final Fantasy V either, right? Like... Mm-hmm. You know, your character's level remains the same. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, he has different skills now. Unless you're a crazy completionist and you want to, like, you know, I have to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of pick and choose what you want and you just roll with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know. Like, I'm going off of a lot of my memories as a kid. Maybe I am remembering things wrong about the job systems in other games. Because that's really, like, just the thought of it. Like, oh, level one. Oh, man. You know, like, like I, it gets into my head, you know, like, dude, I'm not good enough, man. You know, that sort of situation. It's kind of strange, but that's how I think about it.
See, I don't see it that way at all. Like when I was playing Final Fantasy V not that long ago, I didn't think of it as like, oh man, my character's back on level one. I'm like, ooh, what new stuff is he gonna learn?
Yeah.
Like,
but like, it's weird though, because Final Fantasy V didn't really explicitly tell you what your character level is, right? Like just only the job level?
No, that's not true. You had a character level.
Really?
Yeah, you had an explicit character level and you had a job level which was separate.
Okay, then yeah, I am totally remembering things wrong, because like I don't know, like, man, I'm appearing like a really weird fart here. Like, just
I mentioned before, with Final Fantasy V, you level up your jobs with ability points.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but yeah, you still gained experience points, and that's
sure
just for your normal character level.
I thought, well, because I thought that was just basically for like your job level, because, you know, in order for it to level up, and the job points basically were used to just buy the abilities. Like they were two completely different things.
No, you get ability points to level up the job, and when the job levels up, that's when you learn the new skill.
Okay, I think I'm slowly getting this now. I mean, it only took me, like, what, like 15 years or something like that to realize this? So, but I'm getting it. I'm finally getting it after all these years.
Yay!
But still, though, like, don't you think, like, the way that they just did away with leveling and with levels in general in Octopath is kind of elegant? And they just said, like, fuck it. Here's the, you know, here's the job points. Like,
it sounds really cool. I mean, I haven't had the time to jump into it just yet. But, like, it does sound really neat, and I do look forward to playing it myself.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, I mean, I might have said hyperbole and said, like, this is probably the most customizable system of the, you know, version of the job system yet, maybe?
I don't know. Yeah. From Fancy Tactics.
Yeah.
I think may have a leg up on it.
Might be. But at the very least, like, you have access to all the abilities that for your secondary job. And that's kind of the thing that I latch on to, right? Like, because there are limitations in previous job system games, you know, as far as, like, how to use, you know, that, you know, the abilities of the jobs. Like, sure, you can use piecemeal parts from four different things, but it's only specific parts. Whereas, like, an Octopath, it's like, well, your sub-job's a thief. It doesn't freaking matter, because every single thing that you bought for the thief is there, along with all the weapons that they can use. You don't have to, like, you know, earn the right to do that or anything like that. You just equip that, bing, bam, boom. There you go. And I think, to me, like, it would have been a problem, had, you know, as far as the customization goes, had it not had a system that would have kind of counteracted it, right? Like, if the shield breakage system in Octopath Traveler didn't exist, I don't think it would be as compelling as, you know, as it would have been. You know, it's kind of funny, because when I actually initially played Octopath last year, I thought the shield stuff was going to be obtrusive, completely obtrusive. And I thought it was going to be a pain in the butt. And I was like, oh, well, it's not actually that bad, so yay. This is pretty good. I do want to talk about, like, you know, like, as far as job systems go, like, Final Fantasy 14, because that is a game which is interesting, because it tries to do the Final Fantasy 1 thing of, like, hey, you're going to start as a class, and then you're going to get your job, right? And I don't know, like, it's... That approach is interesting, because they literally completely did away with, you know, sub jobs or secondary jobs altogether in that game. It was just like, all right, well, we're just going to copy what Final Fantasy 1 did, bing, bam, boom, and here you go. It's this weird amalgam of, like, the past and the present. And what, I don't know, what do you think? Like, are you more interested in more simplified job systems, or do you like the complexity of, like, the other older systems more?
Alex, knowing what you know about me, what do you think my answer is?
I don't know. Like, I mean, you could go both ways.
Really?
I think it could go both ways. Depending
complicated.
Okay. Needlessly complicated?
Don't straw man me. I didn't say that, sir.
Yeah, well.
Like, what? If I would have said simple, would you have said, like, oh, so simple it's stupid? Like,
no,
come on.
No. It's just sometimes, like, you know, as the Tales game you mentioned and stuff, like, you know, there's those
okay,
outliers.
That, the Tales game I mentioned wasn't complicated. It was stupid.
Okay, all right. I get
that. Tales of the World Radiant Mythology is a weird PSP spin-off game,
mm-hmm.
where crossover Ugh. Thing.
Yeah.
Where you were all the characters from all the Tales games congregate for no reason.
That's weird. That's really weird.
And you play as a nobody, like mute protagonist that can class change for whatever reason. And all the moves that you learn in the different classes are basically just ripoffs of the moves from characters from other Tales games.
Yikes.
So, yeah. Like, the Knight class is basically, like, a copy of Lloyd from Symphonia. And I think it was, like, the Warrior or the Barbarian class or whatever basically copies Luke's moves from Abyss. Like, it's... I mean, and again, whenever you change classes, your character doesn't have a distinct level. It is whatever class level that is. So if you're like, oh, I'm tired of the Knight class, let me do the Monk class. Mm-hmm. Well, too fucking bad. If you were level 50, now you're level 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's terrible. It's not complicated. There's nothing complex about it. It's just poorly designed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I do like the complicated stuff, like in the older games and stuff like that, but like, I don't know, like these days and stuff, like I would like that system to be streamlined. And when I say streamlined, obviously I'm not talking about like dumbing it down, right? Like there is a difference between dumbing down a premise and a mechanic versus streamlining it. And heaven forbid, we've seen a lot of streamlining of the job system over the past several years. May I remind people, and this is going to be a real blast of the past, I guess. Maybe even a crazier blast of the past. That Final Fantasy X2 does have a job system. And it has a crazy one.
The dress spheres.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, I never played that game personally, but I have heard a friend of mine go like, oh yeah, I love the dress spheres.
Yeah, the dress spheres are a pretty good system in my opinion. You know, I think they did some really cool things there. I just don't appreciate that in order to 100% the game and actually get the best ending, I think you have to play the game perfectly and do the right choices from beginning to end, which is really, really insane.
Okay, but you know what, Alex? You know what?
Hmm.
We have the internet.
Okay.
So who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
You just look up the ending. Like,
yeah.
Just type it into YouTube. Just play the game however you want and just be like, I want to know what the real ending is. Let's go on YouTube. Oh, there it is.
But hey, man, you know, watching a YouTube video is not going to get me a trophy for the game that I have, okay? Like,
who gives a fuck about trophies anymore?
I do, at the very least.
Well,
like, when
really?
I look at, well, not, I'm not like a trophy, you know, like,
Dude,
whatever like that.
I used to be a trophy whore when I was like,
mm-hmm.
how long ago was it? Like 7 years ago or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I platinumed Dragon Age 2 for fuck's sakes.
I never knew that at all. Like to me, when I look at people's trophies, it's not so that I can, you know, try to get them or anything like that or any sort of competition, but it's a genuine, you know, way for me to look at other people's profiles and see whether they finished a certain game or not.
No, yeah, that's how I use it nowadays, but like back then I was a fucking trophy whore and it was dark times, and it's part of the reason why I hate Fallout 3 now is because I platinumed it, and by the end of the game I was so sick of it I just didn't want to look at it anymore.
Yeah, you're like, ah, screw this, I don't want to play this again.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it bled over to New Vegas, and I just did not want to touch New Vegas, even though people unanimously agree that it's the better game.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, and it's been a long time since I played Fallout, even now, the thought of going back to it, it's just like, no. Spent so much fucking time on it, and that's and that really was what made me realize the, not toxicity, but just like the, I'll use that word, the toxicity of that kind of behavior, because it makes you start resenting games, right? Because you're no longer looking at games as like this fun pastime or something to do when you want to blow off steam. It becomes work.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Play games and have fun. And granted, if you have fun getting platinums, hey, more power to you. I'm just saying for me.
Okay. So, needless to say, the game that you want to play right now is not Fallout 3, right?
That was... I'm giving it to you for that one. That was not bad.
Thank you. I have my moments on this show, you know? Sometimes I have my moments. But seriously, honestly, though, what would you want to play right now?
You know, all of this talk about job systems and stuff makes me want to play Tactics Ogre.
Ah, I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is
it's made by the guy that did Final Fantasy Tactics.
Well, yeah, Yasumi Matsuno, of course. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, so, and I actually did recently pick up the PS1 version.
Okay, yeah, I have the PSP port of that game.
See, I also have the PSP port, but I'm like, fuck playing that on the PSP. I want to play it on my TV.
Do you have the physical? You probably have the physical of it, right? That's why you're...
Yeah, I have the physical copy of Tactics Ogre.
See, I have the digital version, and of course I have like a couple of PSTVs lying around, so if I wanted to, it's just going to do that.
Although, recently, a friend of mine, a little birdie, I will say, told me that if you mod your PSP and connect it to your computer, you can put... you could display the image of the PSP on your monitor. So when I heard that, I was like, I did not know this.
I mean,
I think there's a little bit of modding I needed to do now.
Well, man, there's also like freaking $400-$500 kits so that you can play like your 3DS on a TV. So I mean, you know, there are ways. It's just...
okay, but like, I don't need to spend $300 on this. I could just USB cable, you know?
Okay, all right. If it's, you know, if it's just like a firmware thing and not a hardware welding thing situation, then I guess there's that.
No, yeah. And apparently you can also use a gamepad instead of holding the PSP itself in order to play. And that sounds like perfection to me. It's like, yes, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Just, I don't even want the PSP to be a handheld. I just want it to be another console.
and that's kind of like why I have the PlayStation TV is, you know, like I really stopped buying PSP games or like physical PS portable games. So which counts the Vita like a long time ago, because I knew that buying it digitally was going to pay off somehow. And of course, the PlayStation TV is not perfect, right? Like, you know, if you try to play Persona 4 Dancing All Night on that one, it's a laugh riot because there is a ton of bad delay between like the display on the TV and of course, you know, the controls and stuff like that, which is really sad. But, you know, like in non-music intensive games, like it's just fine. Like I played, you know, my Persona 4 Golden with it and stuff. But anyways, we are going way far away from the game that you're talking about.
No, real quick. I tried playing Tales of Hearts R on the fucking PlayStation TV. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem with that is one of the mechanics in the game requires you to touch the screen.
Oh.
Right? And that obviously I can't fucking do that with the PlayStation TV. You have to like click on the you know R3 or whatever, and then you have to move the cursor, and this is an action RPG, so everything is like split second. Mm-hmm. So obviously I would never be able to get it to work.
Mm-hmm. Basically the implementation is just crap.
Like, it's fine if you're using an actual PS Vita,
mm-hmm.
but it won't work on, you know, the PlayStation TV. And I felt like, God, this really sucks, because it's like, that's how you activate, like, one of your special moves. So it's like, fuck mm-hmm. you.
But there's, like, have you tried it with the PlayStation 4 controller? Because the PS TV does take the PS4 controller.
Did I? I don't remember.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter now because at the time I didn't have a Vita and now I do. So if I'm going to play that game, I might as well just play it on the Vita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't really remember how the other like mechanics work like on that one. But I do remember like that at the very least, like the PS4 controller could be used, like the touchpad could be used as kind of like a touch thing on there. So, you know,
Yeah. OK, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like why Ogre Battle? Like, it's just because we've been talking about like the job systems and stuff. Like,
yeah, it kind of got me in the mood for that kind of game, you know. And it's of course, for years now I've heard that like, oh, you love Final Fantasy Tactics,
mm-hmm.
you are gonna love Tactics Ogre.
Mm-hmm.
I've just heard that consistently over the years. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I mean, have you played Vagrant Story or any of the other kinds of games that Yasumi Matsuno's made?
I tried playing some of Vagrant Story, and every time I tried playing it, like I couldn't get into it.
Mm.
I remember one of the things that bugged me was the leveling up system was kind of weird. Like, it's like a weird random system.
Hmm.
Like, yeah, like I think like every time you finish an area, at the end, the game randomizes what stats you get and how much of that stat gets increased.
Mm, that's weird.
Yeah, and that always kind of put me off.
Mm.
But I did play some of Final Fantasy XII.
Okay.
Back when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I remember being kind of ambivalent towards it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did pick up the PS4 version, the yep. HD remaster, so I'm hoping one of these days I can go back to it with that version, which is the definitive version from what I hear, and hopefully mm-hmm. I have an easier time getting into it.
I think so. I mean, the problem with the battle system of 12 was it was too slow, right? I mean, really, like you're half the time you're just watching people like, you know, get their ATB up and to attack, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the fact that 12 introduces like kind of like a fastball reading system is fantastic. Like, it really helps out tremendously. And, you know, like a lot of people back in the day were kind of poo-pooing it because like, well, you know, like it's all done automatic and stuff like that. But like, I don't think, I think at the time we were a bit too naive to understand what that game is all about. Like, in terms of the way that it, you know, the way that they've created that game. Like, sure, you can think that you can just automate everything in that game, but you can't just tape down the controller and, you know, expect to basically kill everything in the area, right? Like, because, you know, you'll run out of enemies or you'll encounter a super difficult boss that can one-shot you because the game is like, no, you can't just, you know, cheat like that. Like, we're going to freaking make you face this really powerful guy and you're gonna get clobbered like in one hit, you know.
Yeah. So the thing is though, the only thing that concerns me about 12 is Matsuda couldn't finish that game. Like, I don't remember the specific circumstance. I think he got sick or something.
Health issues. Yes.
Yeah, so he couldn't finish the game and someone else had to basically pick up where he left off. And it apparently, from what I hear, it is fucking noticeable. Like, there are parts of the game that are like, mwah, like fucking beautiful glass of fine wine. And then other parts is just like, what the hell happened?
there are parts of that game that totally feel like they were kind of ushering you along, right? And I think towards the end, you kind of feel that way. And the director who took over is actually the director of 9. I forgot his name.
Oh.
Yeah. He's the one that actually finished 12, and he did a good job for what he did and stuff. And, you know, like, for what it is, I think 12, the Zodiac Age, is, you know, pretty fun game to play still.
I mean, I didn't mean to throw any shade specifically on the person that took over. I mean, I think that's just the product of any time, you know, you have a half finished work and someone else has to, like, you know, pick up the pieces, right? Like,
15, excuse me.
Ooh, that's we're not getting into that. We are not.
Yeah, no. Just had to clear my throat there. Excuse me. Yeah. Okay.
That is a discussion.
Yeah, that's maybe one of us maybe one of us will actually say that game in a future episode. Who knows? Like,
maybe, but not now, because we don't want this to be double the length for the episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true, sir.
Okay, but Alex, okay. All right. We've been talking about what I wanted to play, but what do you want to play?
Okay, for some reason, this has been kind of circling around my head over the past couple of days or so, and I'm about to bust out the freaking PS2 for this game, because that's...
Oh my god, you're going back to this fucking 480p, man?
Not even 480p, dude. This is probably like 480i.
Or interlaced.
Maybe even less than that, because I mean, I don't know.
Do you at least have component cables?
Well, I mean, I was going to play... Well, I was actually honestly going to play it on my backwards compatible PS3, because, you know...
Oh, you still got one of those?
Yeah.
I had like two of them and they both broke.
Dude, man. Okay, so mine actually broke, but there was this dude like in LA that could fix them, and he just basically said like, oh yeah, it's just a power supply and stuff, I'll replace it for you for like $50. And so he did. I was like, holy yes, it's pretty amazing. So mine is still ticking, thankfully. But man, that fan, holy crap, is it loud. But anyways, so... And I heard that it's also coming out on the Switch. So, Okami is the
game. Oh, wait. There's like multiple HD versions of that. What are you doing going back to the original PS2 version?
I don't want to rebuy it. I have the original game on the PS2. And I have this thing where I appreciate the game more if I can play them in the original environment that they're in with all the limitations. Somebody actually wrote like an interesting article or a paper or something like that, where they talked about how, you know, as we're doing a lot of these translations of games and stuff like that, like some people don't feel the need to keep the older versions of games. And from a curation standpoint, like, you know, and I'm not talking about like, you know, like museum type, right? Like, but we're talking about like preservation type, you know, kind of stuff. Like, it's kind of sad that our memories are going to basically be replaced by the newer stuff. Like, think of it this way, Daniel. What if they released a live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, like Michael Bay did, and every memory we have of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles before that point was thrown away?
I don't think that's the same thing. But because we're talking about two completely different films.
But I mean, yes.
While we're talking about remasters, which is basically the same thing, it just doesn't look like ass.
But yeah, like, I mean, that's very true too. And, you know, there are merits to cleaning things up and all that. But it's weird because, you know, like, movies have that happen too, right? Like, you know, like The Godfather, for example, like, you know, they digitally remastered that and cleaned up everything. But instead of making it super uber crisp and stuff like that, as if it was filmed, you know, in a contemporary manner, like modern times, right? Like super sharp HD, they cleaned it just enough so it still retained the feel and the intended effect of it, right? Whereas sometimes, like, when we're making games and remaking games, it is literally for performance sake and all that stuff. And I don't know. There's this interesting question between how much of the game is okay to be changed and to be considered as, the remaster versus, you know, like, there's these questions happening right now, whether what's the merit of playing the new game versus the old game, right?
Okay.
Like, if the new game performs better.
I think I have the perfect comparison for you.
Okay.
The Mega Man X collection that came out recently compared to the Mega Man X collection that came out on the PS2. The one that came out on the PS2 fixed the slowdown in the SNES version of Mega Man X.
Yes.
There is no slowdown. But in the recent re-release, the one that just came out for PS4 and Switch or whatever, retains the slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is trying to perfectly emulate the original version, as opposed to the PS2 collection, which updated it a little bit more than that.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an interesting question to ask, right? Like, you know, like, which one do you feel is, like, closer to the original intent of the developers, and whether or not there's merit to looking at the older games? Because,
see, in my opinion, right, that slowdown is not what the creators wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, generally speaking, slowdown is not preferable. I don't think the slowdown in Mega Man X was an artistic decision by the team. Maybe it was, but I sincerely doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually say that in that instance, the PS2 collection was made in-house by Capcom themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the new one was outsourced or not, but, you know, I do think there is merit to what to both approaches, though, because one could be more true to the artist's original vision, while the other one is more true to how it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to me, like, I come from, you know, I come from that era of the NES and stuff where they literally, like, tried to push the boundaries of that platform as much as they can. Even when the Genesis was out, which was a more powerful platform, they still released the kinds of games that they did for the NES for some friggin' reason, right? And, you know, and just tried to push the boundaries of that platform. Because, like, thinking of it another way, right? Like, if you think about, like, how the console generations have occurred over the past several years, right? Several decades, even. When was the last time a truly super powerful console became the number one best-selling, you know, platform in, like, all over the world? Like, I would venture to guess not for a very long time. Because the PlayStation 4, here's a good example. Like, the PlayStation 4 is barely more powerful than the Xbox One, right? Like, the difference is that there's a chipset that they have that's faster, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you can't run games on the Xbox One in a similar fashion. There's ways around it, programmatically.
Based on what I've seen, most, like, when people did, like, comparisons between the Xbox One and, like, the PS4, the base ones, most PS4 games could run 1080, 60 frames, and
native.
Native, and the Xbox couldn't. It would do, like, a weird, like, 960 or something.
Yeah, like 900p or something.
So, like, there was a difference, but it wasn't like, oh my god, it's huge.
Right. It's not, like, a significant, like, leap, right? Whereas right now, like, you know, several years later after their launch, now Microsoft is like, we have the most powerful console in the market. I'm like, and I started thinking about that. What was the most powerful console of the last generation? It was allegedly the PS3.
Yeah, which struggled for the longest time, and it didn't really do well until, like, late in its life. But then before that, the Xbox was the most powerful, but the PS2, which was the weakest, ended up being the most successful.
Yeah. So, like, we have a very long history of, you know, underpowered hardware. Like, even before that, right? The PlayStation. Like, the Nintendo 64 is a 64-bit platform, and yet the PlayStation had, like, a bunch of the hits, right?
Yeah,
like,
and the PS1 was a 32-bit console.
Exactly. So, like, so if there's anything to think about, like, for me at least, like, I'm interested in seeing how the inferior versions of games actually handle themselves, right? Because, you know, if you're a self-respecting developer, you're not going to launch your game like GIMPed in, you know, like on any platform that you want to release your game on, right? Like, and that's why, like, I feel like that's why I was looking at the ports of Wolfenstein and Doom on the Switch, because, you know, let's face it, like, the Switch isn't the most powerful platform in the market, you know, out of the big three. But the fact that somebody took the time and, you know, and the mind, you know, the mind share to try to, like, bring those two games on that platform is no small feat. But it's out. It is actually fully playable, like, the whole game. And, you know, at practically a fraction of the size, to be quite honest, of the PlayStation version. Because, like, Doom, I think, is, like, 80 gigabytes on the PlayStation 4. And it's 20 on the Nintendo Switch. It's amazing, right?
Crazy.
Like, yeah. And so, like, to me, like, and again, like, if you guys like the newer ports of games and stuff like that, more power to you. Like, I, you know, like, for me, though, like, I want to see the kinds of laborious work they had to do to make things work, right? And Okami is one of those games that was, like, pretty amazing for the time, right? That's a PS2 game, guys. Think about it. Two generations later, we are still doing ports of that game. Still. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really incredible. You know, and it's you know, and I know Clover isn't around anymore and stuff, because, you know, Shinji Mikami made, like, what, like, 15,000 companies after he left Clover or something. And, of course, Suda51, you know, like, flew off and made Grasshopper and all that shit. But that's a game that's probably more timeless than any of the games that came out for, you know, for, I think it was, wasn't it like a... Was it, like, an original PS2 game, or was it a GameCube game? I can't remember.
Okami?
Yeah.
Okami was a PS2 game, and then it got ported to the Wii.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I couldn't remember, because that was a time when Capcom was making, like, weird deals with, like, Nintendo and Sony. Like, they were, like, oh, Resident Evil and PNO3, remember that game? Because nobody freaking remembers that game anymore, but it was on the GameCube, right? And there's Automodelista.
I heard that game was terrible.
There was Automodelista, which is a freaking racing game, which was wild and ahead of its time. You know, there's Monster Hunter, which started on the PS2. You know, it's crazy. It's a crazy time we live in right now, where it seems like Monster Hunter World is going to basically be Game of the Year this year. And, you know, and Okami is coming out on the Switch in the next few days and weeks. So, but bottom line, though, like, I just love Okami's art style, and it really evokes, like, this, like a lot of people say, like, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's basically kind of like a, you know, Zelda style game or whatever, like, but it's, like, it's so unique and it's so painterly, like, it's like not a lot of games have done that aesthetic, right? Like, it's really unique in and of itself, even to this day. Like,
yeah, its art style is beautiful.
Yeah. And I want to say, like, that Okami might have been the first real statement of anybody saying that regardless of how powerful your platform is, if you can execute an art direction extremely well, your game can be, you know, can go beyond, like, its generation. And, of course, like, as you said, it was released on the Wii, now we're getting it on the Switch again. It's like, come on. Like, it's timeless, you know?
And it was made by my main man, Hideki Kamiya.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
He did make that game. Holy cow.
Dude, that guy's track record is spotless.
You're reminding me. I need to friggin' finish Bayonetta. God damn it.
He made Resident Evil 2, and he doesn't even like horror games.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Like, if you like, even thinking about, like, all the old games that we played back in the day. Like, remember the stories of how Hideo Kojima, like, designed his levels in Metal Gear Solid using Legos.
With Legos, and his daughter like reported back to her mom saying like, "Dad's just playing Legos at work."
Yeah. It's amazing to me. And, you know, I will never forget that story because that is proof positive that no matter, you know, what kind of person you are and stuff, you always have the ability to create some really cool things. Like, it might not be with computers. It might not be with actual hardware. You might not be able to create a building in real life or something like that. Like, but there's other ways to do it, right? And, you know, like, when I heard that story, every time, like, I have, like, creative block, like, I always think back to that story, and I'm like, man, what a fucking brilliant guy that guy is, you know? Friggin' Legos, man. But anyways, guys, I think that about does it for this episode. But before we go, we do want to kind of pose a question to you guys. And the question is, you know, what kind of job systems do you guys like that you guys have played? Now, I know, you know, like, we kind of gloss over that stuff. But also, you know, if you guys have an answer to a question what you guys want to play today, you know, feel free to email us, podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. Once again, that is podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. So, yeah, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you guys next week, and happy gaming. Laters.